This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. West Virginia lawmakers have resumed hearings on the possible impeachment of one or more state Supreme Court justices. Members of the House Judiciary Committee heard testimony Thursday from four current employees of the court, focused mainly on suspended Justice Alan Laufrey. Senior reporter Dave Mistich joins us now to talk about the third day of testimony in these impeachment investigations, which was a big one in terms of what we've seen so far. Thanks, Dave, for joining us again.
Hey, Teresa, thanks for having me.
Once again, we are here on a Friday morning, and once again, we're talking potential Supreme Court impeachments. This is becoming a weekly thing for us, it seems.
That's right. Again, these proceedings have kicked off on Thursdays. It's expected they're actually going to finish today. So they have yet to go into Saturday, like was originally planned by House Judiciary Chairman John Schott. But of course, here we are again.
So this week's testimony focused heavily on Justice Alan Laufrey. He, of course, is under 23 counts of federal charges, the latest of which is an obstruction of justice charge added this week by federal prosecutors. That is in addition to charges of fraud, witness tampering, and making false statements. All of this stems from reports that surfaced last year indicating Laufrey was in possession of court property, including a desk and a couch. What did we hear in testimony related to all of that?
Well, we heard from Deputy Director of Supreme Court Security Jess Gundy. He was the first witness to give testimony Thursday. Gundy said that he was asked by Laufrey in a meeting with other court employees to remove a desk, commonly known as a Cass Gilbert desk, and a couch from Laufrey's home. Here's Gundy talking about the moving of that furniture.
He was requesting or trying to enlist my help to move a couch and a desk from his residence. He made sure to tell me that he was not asking me to do anything improper because it was permissible for the justices to have a home office, but he wanted to get it out of his house due to the fact I think there was a newspaper article that a day or two before that said that he had that at his residence.
Gundy actually said the couch was removed from Laufrey's home and the desk that's in question was removed a few days later. The director of Supreme Court Security, Art Angus, and court messenger Paul Mendez reinforced testimony provided by Gundy about Laufrey's use of state vehicles, as well as the moving of the furniture from his home. The two court employees actually assisted Gundy in the moving of that furniture.
Delegates heard more details about plans to move that couch and desk, right? And the testimony was very specific in the lengths to which Laufrey supposedly went through to hide all this from the public. Am I correct?
That's right. So again, Art Angus, he's the director of security for the court, testified that media attention had been drawn to Laufrey and that the justice had planned to remove the desk from his home at a time when neighbors would not see it being moved. He and Mendez said they were told to wait for notice from Laufrey's wife so that no one would see them. Here's Angus talking about the day they had planned to move the desk.
He said, no, I want to get it out of my house. They think I shouldn't have it there. I want to get it out of there. I said, well, okay. So he said, we'll go up early. We'll go up early Thursday morning. And because we're going to have a time of getting it out and put it in the garage. We'll go early. And then we'll leave and I'll just have Kelly call me if the neighbor leaves because we don't need to be all photographed again.
We've come to understand that over the course of the media learning of the furniture at Laufrey's home and it being removed, Laufrey contended the couch once belonged to former Justice Joseph Albright, who is now deceased. In emails, Laufrey told reporters that upon Albright's death, the former justice's family gathered some possessions but left others, including the couch. But it wasn't just about the moving of the furniture that implicates Laufrey of wrongdoing, is it?
That's right. And so Gundy and Angus, of course, they mostly handle security for the court. They also help coordinate the court's fleet vehicles, you know, the owned by the state. They both testified that Laufrey would often take these vehicles on weekends, and also without providing a destination or purpose. They both reported that Loughery told them at various points that Supreme Court justices did not need to provide that information about where they were going and why. What was really interesting, though, moving a little bit ahead here, is when Gundy detailed a strained relationship between Loughery and former court administrator Steve Canterbury. Gundy recalled escorting Canterbury from the court offices when he was fired by Loughery in January 2017. And here's Gundy recalling that moment in a line of questioning from Republican delegate Tom Fast.
Did he say what he was going to do? Did he say that this place is out of order? Did he point out flaws in other justices or in any of the justices?
Like I said, he kept referring to going to the press. He made references to that many times. One quote that I remember, he said, I don't know whether I'm just going to ride off into the sunset or whether I'm going to contact the press and tell them everything.
The committee also heard from court public information officer Jennifer Bundy. This was about communications she sent on behalf of the court to reporters inquiring about Loughery's possession and removal of furniture from his home, right?
That's right. And Bundy testified she was directed by Loughery to tell reporters about a policy that allowed for home offices when no such policy existed. She also said at times Loughery would direct her to answer media questions regarding the furniture, and at various other times he would answer them himself. Bundy said that Loughery directly responded to media inquiries without conferring with her. She recalled expressing some apprehension about her job security to Loughery about all of this.
At one point, I became concerned about my job because they were answering media questions that seemed to be important to me, and I wasn't involved in that. And I just found Justice Loughery and Judge Johnson. They were at a conference downtown, a circuit judges conference, and found them and asked them, am I going to lose my job? Why aren't you involving me in these conversations? And Justice Loughery assured me that I was not going to lose my job. He said it two or three times, but Judge Johnson told me that the reason they had not involved me was because I had said I was friends with Steve Canterbury and they didn't want to put me in a difficult position.
And as you heard there, this is all very interesting testimony from Bundy. We'll get back to her here in a moment regarding some other developments during these proceedings that are expected today. But actually, we're expecting to hear from some testimony from Steve Canterbury, the former administrator of the court, sometime during this next round of hearings. We understand that to come sometime next week.
So let's recap this and what happened last week and this latest round of hearings. To this point, members of the committee have heard testimony from state legislative auditors, former court employees, current court employees, all of whom have testified about their knowledge of justices' use of state vehicles and possession of state property in private homes, as well as lavish spending for office renovations.
That's right. The focus, of course, remains on suspended Justice Alan Loughery. He's been indicted on 23 counts of federal charges. Again, that's fraud, witness tampering, making false statements, and obstruction of justice. He was suspended without pay last month, back in June, following a statement of charges from the Judicial Investigations Commission. It's an investigative group with arm of the court. They also, help hand down disciplinary action. To get us all the way back up to speed, this is all a result of the adoption of a resolution last month. The House of Delegates and House Resolution 201 authorized its Judiciary Committee to investigate the possible impeachment of all five of the justices on the state's high court. Under scrutiny for using a state vehicle for personal reasons, Justice Minis Ketchum, he actually announced his retirement last week.
So what does this look like going forward? Committee members are scheduled to resume hearings today, including a tour of Supreme Court offices, right?
Well, that's what's supposed to be what's going to happen. The big question is whether or not reporters like myself will get to be a part of that. After stepping down from the witness stand, Jennifer Bundy, the court public information officer who testified yesterday, she said media would not be allowed to take part in this tour. We were told to request another time to view the Supreme Court offices. I should say, though, that the whole press corps, all the folks that are covering the impeachment proceedings in the news media, have pressed to be a part of that tour today, to have the exact same access as the committee today, and be provided answers as to why we have been excluded.
Well, Dave, it seems like there's a lot to look forward to. So thanks so much for joining us for this update. And we'll be paying attention to this as it moves along.
You're welcome, Teresa. I'm sure we can expect to see one another next week.
That was Dave Mistich, senior reporter for West Virginia Public Broadcasting, joining us live to talk about the latest on proceedings on possible Supreme Court impeachments. For more, visit us online at wvpublic.org. More than a third of American adults don't get enough sleep, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And the problem is even worse in West Virginia. This is really a big deal for America's health. As Carol Lofton reports in the next installment of Outside in Appalachia, restarting sleep patterns may begin with getting outside at night.
At Blackwater State Park, Pauletta Cousins is leading a night hike.
So that is actually a natural resource up there above us, and it's disappearing at the speed of light. So if you look at the United States, or even the world from outer space, well, in the United States, you'll see that the whole eastern United States is all brightly lit up. You can see it from space. There's one little small dark spot on the east.
Where's that?
West Virginia is one of the darkest spots on the eastern seaboard, a fact that could be good news for our health.
When it's dark, we're naturally supposed to be sleeping. And light is actually messing up a chemical that we have in our body to make us be healthy individuals.
Exposure to light suppresses the secretion of melatonin, a hormone that influences circadian rhythms. And there's some early evidence that lower melatonin levels might explain the association with cancer. Despite being one of the darkest spots on the East Coast, West Virginia ties with New York, with almost 40% of residents reporting less than 7 hours of sleep a night. Not getting enough sleep is associated with metabolic problems, issues with insulin resistance, and weight gain, according to the National Institutes of Health. Interestingly, nationwide, sleep patterns look similar to maps of obesity and diabetes prevalence. So, if your circadian rhythms are messed up, how do you reset them?
We did a study, actually a series of three studies, where we used camping essentially as a tool to escape the light exposure that you get in modern cities.
That's Chris Deppner, a postdoctoral fellow in the sleep lab of the University of Colorado Boulder. He was part of a study to see if we escaped all electrical light, what would that do to our bodies and our biological clocks?
Over a week, our biological clocks basically tune themselves to the timing of sunrise and sunset. So that means during the normal biological or environmental night, that's when our bodies were trying to sleep, and during the day, that's when we were supposed to be awake.
They then tested the hypothesis over just a weekend of camping.
And we saw that about 70% of that effect happened over just the weekend. So that means when you think about that, like on Monday morning, then when you wake up, your body's going to be more in tune with the environmental cycle versus perhaps if you're living in the electrical lighting environment, where you could be more in tune with the electrical environment.
While light of any kind can suppress the secretion of melatonin, blue light at night, such as the kind found on phones, computers, and TVs, does so more powerfully. A Harvard study found that when people were exposed to blue versus green light, blue light suppresses melatonin for about twice as long as the green light and shifted circadian rhythms by twice as much. What isn't clear from the research is whether spending more time outside does the trick, or if simply dimming the lights in your home and turning off the TV, cell phone, and other electronic devices a couple hours before bed would suffice. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. In the fall of 2017, Bruce Cockburn joined Neil Young in being inducted into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame. His song, Lovers in a Dangerous Time, helps justify that distinction and is our Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
Don't the hours grow shorter as the days go by? You never get to stop and open your eyes. One day you're dazzled by the beauty of it all. When you're lovers in a dangerous time, lovers in a dangerous time, these fragile bodies of touch and taste, this vibrant skin, this hair like lace. Spirits open to the thrust of grace. Never a breath you can afford to waste. When you're lovers in a dangerous time.
To hear Coburn's performance and more, tune into Mountain Stage Friday and Saturday nights at 8, right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.